First time with the program?
I can always spot a newbie. It's my fifth year with Wings. I guess Paul McCartney's got nothing on me, huh? Love, take me down to the streets.
It's not a Wings song.
Yeah, it's one of their hits from the 70s. I'm not sure which one.
It's not.
It isn't?
No.
I think it might be.
That's not. Nobody sings that song.
I don't know about that. I'll have to Google it.
TBTL.
So then I said to Woody Allen, well, Camus can do, but Sartre is smartra.
So original.
How true.
Yeah, well, Scooby-Doo can doo-doo, but Jimmy Carter is martyr.
I feel like we're just like in that tired mode where you're delirious and you're laughing at silly things.
What's that drop that's like, you're doing a good job, sweetie. What you do is so important.
Sweetie, have a good show. What you do is so important.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of TBTL.
Let's dive deep into the darkness.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Hi, everybody.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's promising to be another beautiful sunny day here eventually, although right now I am staring directly at the sun without sunglasses. I don't know how most of you picture me doing the show here day in, day out. If you think that I'm wearing some shades while I do it, I generally don't. But I'm able to look at the sun sans eye protection because it's behind what I think is maybe some more smoke. There was supposed to be more smoke possibly moving into the area. Sadly, I think many of us now understand that there are those days when you can just look at the sun and it's reddish. I often describe it as being like on Tatooine. We're having that right now. I don't know if what that indicates for the rest of the day, but we'll just see where things go.
Oh, la, la.
We know where things are going to go here on episode 3261 in A Collector Series.
Let the fun begin.
Well, first of all, we're off to a hot start because I actually have the show number right today. I guess it was wrong yesterday. Sorry. Few people throwing their phones, but yeah, we're back on track. We're in the mix, baby, and we know what number of episode we're on. Again, 3261 in A Collector Series. I don't know if you heard, but there was a presidential debate last night.
It was literally a major disaster.
I think it's time that we just face facts as a podcasting family. As an imaginary radio community, as much as we try to be a little bit of a shelter from the storm, a respite from all of the political noise happening out there, we're probably going to stray into politics and our experience with the various parts of the presidential campaign between now and the election, and hopefully not for a long time after, because hopefully things will become more clear once we've all cast our ballots. But it's very hard to live in this world and then to come, like, you know, the other 22, 23 hours out of the day and then turn this microphone on and then not want to just sort of reflect on what we all witnessed last night. So anyway, that's something that we're going to talk about. Also, on the lighter side of life, five parrots have been removed from a British wildlife park because they were swearing at customers.
Let's go.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
There's some nice dazzling deets in this article, including how surprisingly frequent wildlife parks getting birds whose main way of communicating is through swear words. This is a fairly common thing that has now gone up because of the pandemic. So we will get into that. Also, who knew? There are international counterfeit honey rings.
Memories are made in your mouth.
Honey is the third most counterfeited food out there. Could you name the first two most counterfeited foods? Yes, I can, because I read the article, and we're going to tell you about it coming up. We'll do all that with the help of this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He is, to me, when he's speaking, an innocent champion of honesty. He's a professional. Look it up in the book. He's an amateur rollerblader, but who knows? That could change.
How are people going to know that my character is hip if he doesn't roll the blade?
He is Andrew Welsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I'm going to walk very gingerly and gently out onto some thin ice here and ask you something that I've been meaning to ask you off air, and I keep forgetting, and now here we are on the show, and I shouldn't do it here, but I'm going to ask you here anyway. What are the rules for unsubscribing to your friend's newsletter if you never signed up for said newsletter? And what are the ethics on both sides of that? I'm talking here, I'm not going to use any names, although that's stupid because everybody can figure this out, but we have some friends who used to have a radio show. Then they turned that radio show into a podcast and real estate business. And, you know, I'm good friends with one of these people. But I did not sign up for the new, you know, biweekly newsletter that was going to come along with their new various adventures. And this has been going on for maybe a year now. And I feel like I've received and scanned a year's worth of newsletters. Can I unsubscribe? Will they see that I unsubscribed? If they do confront me about it, can I say, well, I didn't sign up for that? Like, what's with just automatically signing me up for that? What are your thoughts?
I think it's fair game to unsubscribe from any newsletter, email, whatnot, that you did not sign up for. Mm-hmm. So I think it's totally fine. I mean, and I think if whoever these unnamed radio hosts who continue to give you all two episodes per week, if they were to be upset at that, I think you would be you'd be on the sort of moral high ground of saying, well, you know, I didn't actually sign up for it, so that's why I'm unsubscribing. I am also subscribed to the same e-blast. I also did not ever ask to be e-blasted, but I, for some reason, find it kind of delightful to know what's going on.
That's kind of the other side of it. Like, right now, I opened up, and this is a part of me, this is like kind of, again, if I have OCD tendencies, this is the type of place where it pops out. Like, I just opened my Gmail for the morning, and I have a whole bunch of emails in here, not because I'm an important man, but just because, like, you know, I have a bunch of press releases from music labels that I actually want to go through later, and those kind of build up. And I just – one of the things I do when I see tons of email is I start deleting the low-hanging fruit first. I just want to see less unread emails in my email folder. And I see this in here, and then just sort of – it's just like – like, sometimes I see it and it puts a smile on my face. And today I'm just kind of like, I just don't need this chaff in here. You know, I'm trying to get to the wheat.
Right.
And so I'm almost like I'm hovering over the unsubscribe button. But then I'm like, yeah, but is this one of those things where everybody invites you to a party and you say, no, I just want to stay home and play Mario Kart. And then you do that. And then halfway through playing Mario Kart, you're like, oh, I wonder how that party's going. And now I can't go. I can't, because I can't resubscribe. We all agree on that, right? I can't unsubscribe and then resubscribe, because then the jig is up.
Well, I have good news for you, Andrew. There's a little, just a little sunlight shining through the show on this Wednesday when I think a lot of us are still reeling from what happened last night on national television. And the good news is I will continue to take delivery of this e-blast.
It's true.
And if anything memorable or notable is in there, I will tell you about it.
That's
so you,
an arrangement.
My friend, don't have to worry about missing anything. And honestly, this is the one time I'm paying you back on this. There are about 100 examples related to our work where you are the one tracking things, monitoring situations, and letting me know when I should know about it. This is the one time when I can offer that service to you, my friend.
Okay, I can maybe also return the favor a little bit, although it sounds like you don't need me to, but I receive about 3 to 5 emails from a local independent Seattle journalistic operation called Publicola every day. Would you like me to let you know what's in all of those? Kind of summarize what's going on in Seattle City Council. And
I'm more of a tab guy.
Okay, no, a public tab.
How did that ever get started? Like, Cola as it must stand for something, right? Because that organization, Public Cola, has been around for a long time, and I feel like I've seen that in other places. That kind of I don't know how to describe words, but you know what I mean? C O L A as being on things, or is that just a Northwest phenomenon?
That's a good question, because here's what I know about it. This was a little independent project started a long time ago by journalist Erica C. Barnett, who I'm a fan of, and Josh, one other ex-Stranger reporter, and they created this.
Josh Feit, probably.
Yeah, I think Josh Feit, and I think they created it around 2009, 2010. I was new to Seattle at the time, and so this was a good resource for me. And I liked The Stranger, and I liked seeing what these ex-Stranger writers were doing. And then I think they kind of went their own way. They sold the name of it to Seattle Met or something, and then Erica just kept on doing her own thing independently, and then just recently got the name back, and she's publishing under the name Public Cola again. So that's not really interesting to the audience, but that's kind of like the life of this thing. And every time I see Public Cola, it does remind me of something else, yet I can't think of any other examples of something that has cola in it. Like, because it does feel very familiar to me, yet I can't think of other examples.
Well, the Public Cola was, the internet is telling me this, was one of the founding members of the Roman Republic. And I bet you, if you were to dig down in it, I bet you Public Cola, this figure from ancient Rome, stood for, nicknames for Public Cola, friend of the people. That would probably be the public part of it.
Okay, all right.
So my guess would be that it's a reference to a news outlet or something that is informing the people, that is a friend of the people. I bet you it's a callback to that.
Interesting. But I do think it's interesting that you brought up, though, like, hey, is this a Northwest thing? Why is there kind of a rash of things that are called cola, yet I can't think of other examples, yet it feels to me.
You know what I'm blending it with? ProPublica.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because ProPublica is kind of just one street over, and yep. ProPublica gets a lot of attention because it's a national organization, do a lot of amazing reporting, and you know they team up with This American Life and plenty of other news producers, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ProPublica and Public Cola were always just kind of blending together in my mind a little bit.
I think me too. I think you nailed it. Thank you. You might even throw in a little Politico if it came around the same time. Just a dash.
They sound vaguely Roman. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have told you that before I Googled ProPublica. But yeah, ProPublica, Politico, and Public Cola are all, you know, kind of they all blend together in my mind. I hope all three of them are able to write some interesting and trenchant reviews of the debate last night, because I certainly am not. And I don't even really – I kind of gave a little statement at the top of the show, which I didn't really clear with you, Andrew, so I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn. You have a 50% voting interest in this. But, like, you know – I don't want this show just to become a political rant or a place that feels extra sad because, like, something happened on TV that I think troubled a lot of us last night, and then maybe folks want to turn on TBTL today and they want to just hear about swearing parrots. On one side is the idea that I don't want this just to become a place that is kind of just making things worse for people who are having a lot of anxiety. By the way, I was asking my therapist yesterday the difference between anxiety and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, are those the same thing? And she said, well, anxiety is when you think there's a saber-toothed tiger around the corner, and then fear is when you see the saber-toothed tiger.
That's awesome.
Isn't that like very – like I'd never thought of it that way.
I didn't even think of linking the two, honestly, but your question ends up being a good one, especially with such a good answer. And it sounds like she thought of it, or your therapist, I think, is it she? I don't know. Your therapist had thought of it before. That's interesting.
Well, or if she was freelancing that was a pretty good
pull. All the more, yeah.
Because I was talking about how sometimes I'll get mad in situations, and we were kind of – and in fact, I feel very mad today about what the president did during the debate last night. But, you know, usually when we're mad, it's actually we're feeling fear. And then the fear for people like me transitions into anger really fast, because being fearful, if you feel pretty vulnerable and exposed. And when you're mad, that's a different feeling. Now you're out of the fear. At least you're not aware of the fear. Now you're aware of the being mad, which is a less scary place to be. And so anyway, I don't know if it's anxiety, fear, or anger, whatever you're feeling today. That was a quite frustrating thing to watch last night. Did you end up actually watching all part or none of the debate?
Yeah, and I'm interested to know your watching experience. You know, I had brought this up, actually, much like the scintillating newsletter talk at the top of today's show, I brought it up, I think, somewhat cautiously, because I wasn't planning on watching it, because these things kind of give me anxiety in the best of times, and I figured
but this
is not the
best. But then it converts into fear when you actually see the saber-tooth.
Right. Yes. I'm going to turn down my mic a little bit. Sorry if I just blasted you down the line. What ended up happening was my day was stacked in a way that kind of made it impossible for me to watch it. Genevieve and I were recording. We started recording probably about 15 minutes to a half hour into the debate. So what I tried doing was, while I was doing my show prep, I turned on the TV on one of my computers here and sort of had it on in the background, but it was very distracting, as you can imagine, as I'm, you know, trying to do research on commercials, and I just hear these two men yelling at each other, kind of bickering, and that was early on. And I got to say, I got to the point where at one point, like, I don't know, I expect nothing of Trump other than be terrible, but all I wanted out of the debate was that Biden wouldn't get dragged into the mud. And I did, like, hurt up to a point where, like, Biden looks in the camera and snidely says something like, "Well, that was really useful, wasn't it?" And then he said something else kind of nasty there, and I was like, I can't do this, I'm turning it off. And then we recorded our show, and then an hour later, I'm like, well, I wonder what happened. I'll open up Twitter. I open up Twitter, and the very, very first thing I hear is Jake Tapper just saying that was basically an assault on our democracy. And is it Dana Bash said that was a shit show. And I was just like, wow, I really missed something, didn't I? So that was my experience. What was yours?
You really didn't miss very much. So I mentioned my dad was passing through town, so he came over and and he was – I was like, by the way, not that anyone cares, but boy, we have a – we have officially uncovered maybe the most hardcore Never Trumper in our family. Not only is my dad not down with Trump, but I don't think I've seen the guy as animated about any topic in the last 20 years as how much he loathes that guy. Mm-hmm. But so I asked him, hey, do you want to watch some of this? And I asked Carrie too. It was Taco Tuesday. So she was. We were whipping up some tacos. We're gonna have a safe outdoor little meal out there on the porch. And I said, "Does anybody want to watch this?" And they were both like, "We're gonna pass. We don't need to be triggered in that way." But some part of me, even though I said yesterday on the show I probably wasn't gonna watch it, I just wanted to see, like, the first few minutes. I wanted to see what sort of Biden's almost like physical carriage was as he walked out to the podium. I wanted to see what Trump looked like. I guess even though I cautioned the listeners yesterday against having expectations that somehow Biden was going to be able to say something that would just, you know, I don't know, like that the Biden was going to have magic words to say that were somehow going to turn, you know, Trump into a pile of salt or something. Like, I knew that wasn't going to happen. And I knew that the people who like Trump are just going to continue to root for him. I knew that going in, and yet some part of me foolishly thought, well, maybe Biden's going to just come out and he's just going to be so presidential and so, like, you know, there's just going to be something about him, because I've watched him debate a little bit in the Democratic, which, you know, he's had good debates and bad debates amongst those huge, like, royal rumbles on stage with like 9-10 other candidates. But I just kind of wanted to see what was going to happen. And, you know, what happened was really frustrating, because essentially Trump just bullied the entire process. He bullied Chris Wallace, the moderator. He bullied Biden. Anytime Biden would talk, he would just be talking over him, like, and giving a running commentary. And Biden just had, like, kind of had no choice other than to either stop and try to address the specific lies that Trump is just injecting into the microphone, or just continue saying what he was going to say with literally another adult human speaking at full volume. You know what I mean? It was it laid bare how impossible it is to have a meaningful conversation when one of the people on stage is in the midst of a mental and emotional health crisis. And so I honestly was like, at times was hoping that Biden would just like walk off stage, or that Chris Wallace would walk off stage. There's a moment where Trump says, well, I guess I'm debating you, Chris, because Chris Wallace had the temerity to want to be able to ask his questions. So it just became – it was sort of – I can't think of a great analogy, but it was very frustrating because it immediately became something where you realized you can't have this format with this person on stage. It's impossible. And, you know, I'm sure there's a debate scheduled for Mike Pence and Kamala Harris, and I'm sure that will be a completely fine debate. Joe Biden would have been able to have a completely substantive debate with any number of other Republicans. You cannot do this with Donald Trump. And I think it's worse now because he's like – the other thing is, look, no offense, Biden is not a great debater at this point. Like, we're not sending out our best and brightest. Like, I think Hillary did a much better job, actually, at dealing with Trump when she was running against him.
I remember seeing, because, if you don't mind me jumping in for a second, I remember seeing real progress with her, which I really liked. Because I think I was sure, whatever, I'll vote for Hillary Clinton around the time of the first debate. And I think the first debate was pretty rough because he was being a bully. And then I remember, like, progress, because I think they did three. And by the third one, I thought she killed it. And I remember specifically thinking, like, I can't remember really going from, like, feeling very half-hearted about a candidate to feeling like, yes, like, if you stood up to this person in this really tough situation and did a really good job. And I remember the third one making me very excited about her as a candidate and as a president. Sorry.
I agree. And maybe Biden will get better. But I mean, Biden is not young. And I don't think Biden's known for his great, you know, debate oratory. There were just times where, and I understand getting flustered, because literally every time he would start talking, he has somebody just, I mean, you know, when you're hosting a radio show and the producer, you're trying to talk and the producer jumps into your headphones to tell you something. Mm-hmm. And there's like a basic human component that you can't talk while someone is trying to talk to you. It's hard. And so there were little, you know, just details about number of deaths from COVID and whether we're talking about Medicaid or Medicare. Like, it was hard for Biden to stay on message. I think what I have seen today in the post-mort is that, you know, Biden's number one job was to not get drawn into too much ugliness, and he mostly avoided that. And so, you know, I don't think weirdly last night I went and read the Fox News, like, kind of account of things. So I was just curious about what they were saying. And the on the website, anyway, the opinion guy they were using was basically saying Trump looked pretty bad, but he won because he just controlled the conversation. And this writer was saying it wasn't even the substance of what he was saying. It was that he just literally bullied the whole thing. And so in a certain way, he kind of won. But I mean, I don't think anyone got their mind changed last night. Just the real question is, like, should they even keep doing this? Because you just have a person on stage who just refuses to obey any of the rules of the thing. And I mean, I wouldn't have surprised me if at some point Trump would have just walked down in the middle of the stage, pulled his pants down, and took a shit. Like, that's the level of puerile infant behavior that was going on from him particularly. I was thinking maybe for the next one what they have to do is the idea is each person gets a couple minutes to say their thing, and then there's this open conversation part of it. And it should really be you get 2 minutes, and then at 2 minutes they cut your mic. That seems to be the only thing they could possibly do. And that's less for Biden than for Trump, obviously, because he would also just like – he wouldn't stop when his time was up. You know, you literally have to have a way to kill his microphone, or you can't have these debates, it would seem.
Yeah, I that's all I heard. So obviously when we were done recording, I just like kind of jumped in, put on MSNBC, watched that for a while, read the New York Times recap as soon as it was available, and all the coverage, tweets, TV coverage I saw, everybody's just talking about the cutting of the mic thing. I did hear one person say, though, that that's maybe not as easily said than done because of the commission that runs the debates is just very stodgy and won't change like that. Maybe this a catastrophic event like this will force the issue. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know what I want to say here. I guess my one take was, and this is maybe repeating what you just said, was we don't think there's a lot of undecided people, right? Undecided right. Voters out there. I mean, I am, because I never decide until the vice president's debate, then the candidates there. Sure. I always think that's funny. Like, I'm actually sort of looking forward to that because I like Senator Harris, but like I it's just so funny. Like, I guess we have to have them, but like, has anybody's vote been swayed by a vice presidential debate?
In this case, where both of the presidents, both of the presidential candidates will be verifiably elderly, I personally am curious about the person who may finish out their term for them.
Yeah,
but
that's
of course,
a really good way of thinking
but
of
it. Course, my opinion is already, you know, forged
right.
On this. I just want to see Kamala Harris run rings around Mike Pence, because Mike Pence wants to probably somewhere wants to be as just absolutely soulless and venial as Trump, but he just doesn't have it in him. Like, I mean, I'm not saying Mike Pence is a great guy, but what I'm saying is Mike Pence will stand on that stage and he will wait for Senator Harris to finish, or I should say vice presidential candidate Harris to finish her statements. And because Mike Pence will actually abide by the rules of the debate, it will allow Kamala Harris to actually say what she wants to say. And what she will say will be, I think, absolutely devastating to that administration and Mike Pence. So, like, I just want to watch it because I basically want to see in that debate what I was wishing I could see last night, which is the truth just being laid bare. I went to bed last night. Rehearsing's the wrong word. I went to bed last night practicing what I would have said if I were Joe Biden.
Well, actually, yeah, could you mind? I'm sorry. I kind of went on a quick tangent with the vice presidential thing. So can I just go back and finish my thought, what I was starting to say before, which, again, is a little bit of a repeat of what you were saying. And it's very – I feel very naive saying this, having not seen the debate and not understanding it. But this was my thought going in. And then my confusion reading the recap coverage and seeing the clips online is – it seems to me if there's any part of the population that is swayable right now in late September of 2020, it would be the people who were open to Trump in some way, potentially even voted for Trump in the first place, because they have some sort of an attitude of a combination of, well, they're all a bunch of clowns anyway. Somebody can shake this up. What's the worst that can happen? But now they're seeing kind of the worst that can happen around them. And there's a chance they might vote for the other ticket, or maybe not skip this election, you know, like the get out the vote angle. Like maybe there's somebody who right now is thinking it's all a bunch of bullshit. I wish I hadn't voted for Trump last time, but they're all a bunch of clowns. I'm just going to stay home. But maybe it seemed to me that, and again, this is very naive and a simplistic way of putting it, but I thought to that end, all Biden has to do is stand up there and look like a responsible, respectable man that can remind people what the presidency used to look like 4 years ago and earlier. You know, just bring a little bit of respect and decorum. And I sort of thought, like, if Trump won't stop talking, then stop talking. Because sometimes Trump talking is the worst thing that Trump can do to himself anyway. So would it have, as somebody who did not watch this live, would it have been possible for Biden to, okay, Chris Wallace asks me a question. I'm Biden. I start to answer it, and then I'm interrupted again. What if I had just, like, patiently but somewhat not petulantly. You don't want to look petulant, but, like, resigned and, oh, come on, America. Just, like, fold my hands in front of me and just let him go on and on and on and have this sort of unsaid thing with America, which is, I don't even have to say it, look at this guy over here.
He did try to do that. People were calling it pulling a Jim from The Office.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
He tried. It was a pretty no-win situation for him because – and also I didn't really like the way that – I don't think this was a attempt by Fox to sway things, but I didn't love the camera angles they were using because I don't know. It's kind of disorienting as a viewer a little bit. So when Biden – it just seemed like when Biden was just waiting or looking off or sort of doing that Jim from The Office, just like this guy is ridiculous, because they were so tight on Biden, it almost made Biden look a little silly too. It's hard. I'm not describing it very well. People who watched the debate know what I'm talking about. But I mean, I think he vacillated between every kind of technique he could think of or he had been coached to do, which was sometimes fighting back, sometimes letting it go, sometimes looking to Chris Wallace. I mean, that's part of the problem there is what you really want to say is, if you're Biden, the natural instinct is to say to Chris Wallace, can you please get this guy under control? But it's like, no, Chris Wallace is not able to get him under control. And being the, you know, the opponent, basically like asking the teacher to referee it in some people's mind. Again, people are probably already pro-Trump, so what does it matter? But the idea of going like, Chris, he's being unfair mm-hmm. is like a bad look.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's sort of like, I mean, there's no good, there's just no good strategy for Biden in that moment. But yeah, letting Trump, I mean, the problem too is that he's just lying, he just actively lies the whole time. And so you're either just letting him poison the air with his lies, or you try to sometimes sort of put some context mm-hmm. to things. And again, I'll say, if they have two more of these, I bet you Biden will get better. I bet you they will. He and his team will study this. I mean, here's the thing. What bothers me is that the headlines today everywhere are essentially "what a shit show." But "what a shit show" makes it sound like both, you know, candidates were equally disrespectful to the process, and that's just not
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like really the headline should be "Trump pissed all over the stage, and some of it got on Biden's shoes." Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the accurate description of what happened. And it frustrates me because it's that kind of like a bothism. You know, both sides resorted to personal attacks.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, yeah, Biden, there was a few times where Biden was frustrated and did that. But I can promise you that if Biden was debating Mitt Romney, this is not how this debate would have looked.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, and you know, I ended up watching. I only watched probably the first like 30 minutes, and I was just like, I can't take this right now. Plus, the tacos are ready, so I went back out and I informed my dad and Carrie that they had made the right decision to skip it.
Mm.
And then later, I watched a little bit more of it, and then I just took a picture of Rudy standing in front of some tacos and tweeted that, because that's how I deal with my anxiety and my fear and my rage.
Oh, you know, I saw that photo. It was cute. It was her chew toy, a taco chew. She had like a little stuffed animal in front of her. I missed the Taco Tuesday reference in that. Where were the tacos in that photo?
Well, it is Taco Tuesday, Andrew, which is a state of mind.
That's what
I think you should look into.
Meant,
it was
yeah.
Tuesday, and we have tacos. If you were to look in the oven...
Oh, I see.
There are taco shells that are warming, about to be united with taco fixings that were behind me on the kitchen peninsula. Now, I will say this, because nobody asked, and because we're 30 minutes into the show, and because it's time for us to move into some patented TBTL light fare, I made a critical error yesterday in that we were going to put some fake ground beef into the tacos, and there's two different leading brands for that that are kind of the prestige brands. One of them is the Impossible ground beef substitute, and one of them is the Beyond ground beef substitute. And if you are somebody who doesn't eat a lot of fake hamburgers or fake hamburger meat, you may think these are interchangeable. And sometimes you'll go to a restaurant and you'll say, "Do you have a fake meat burger?" And they'll say, "Yeah, we've got the Impossible," and I'll think yes, and then it'll come out. I'll take one bite and I'll go, nope, this is the Beyond. There is a massive difference between the Impossible fake beef and the Beyond. The Beyond tastes to me like something that is not hamburger but trying to be hamburger.
Mm.
And the Impossible just tastes like you're eating something that's hamburger. There's just, you cannot tell the difference. And we had a frozen, like a brand new frozen section, I don't know what you'd call it. We had a thing of the Beyond meat, and I thought, well, we're going to put taco seasoning in. It's going to be in tacos. You'll never know. Boy, was it noticeable. So I went from an unwatchably frustrating debate to because Carrie had said, "What, do you want me to get more Impossible meat?" And I was like, no, we got this Beyond. Let's use it. It was $8. And that was a real mistake. So it was a tough night for me, Andrew.
Wow.
A real tough night.
Wow. Nobody was tweeting about that, though.
Where's my parade
about this stupid debate thing? But good. Well, we talked about it. I wasn't even sure if we were going to talk about that today. I mean, I ended up seeing it on the show sheet. But I would the debate thing. I was ready to like talk about anything but. So I don't know if people enjoyed that or not. I'm not saying that I'm not negging you there, Luke. I'm just saying that like I was ready to just bring up. I told you today I had a very weird. Sometimes I wake up and I have time or the inclination to create a new little intro mix for the beginning of the show. Sometimes we'll just pull one that I made months or years ago because they're pretty reusable in a lot of cases. And today I had plenty that I could have reused, but I just really wanted to hear Love Take Me Down to the Streets. And I don't know if it's a reaction to yesterday, but like my soul was just calling for that intro tape we heard, Love Take Me Down to the Streets, from, is the movie Role Models? Is that what it's from? It's A.D. Miles, yeah. I know, talking to, I don't know who the other person is.
Is it Paul Rudd?
Oh, yeah, that's Paul Rudd. Right, of course. But
National Treasure, Paul Rudd.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of salve for me. I don't think I've ever woken up sort of like craving intro tape like that before. I'm going to blame it on the anxiety and the saber-toothed tigers.
Again, I'm hoping that we don't I'm hoping that we're able to, and maybe you can hold me accountable on this, Andrew, we're able to like make this mostly a politics-free zone, or mostly just a lower anxiety zone than what our regular life feels like right now. So I'm not planning on literally talking about politics every single day. But if it is the day after a debate, it's probably going to be hard for me to not want to sort of address what maybe we're all feeling or what we all kind of saw. So I'll try to, I'll try to make this mostly still a place where we talk about fake meat and swearing birds. Speaking of which, let's take a little quick break, and then we'll come back and we will get to those top stories here on TBTL.
Thank you, baby.
All right, let's thank some donors of the day. These are the people that are making today's episode possible through their donations, and we are very, very, very grateful, because this show would not be happening without people like Jennifer Vinciguerra from Falls Church, Virginia. I know Jennifer. Jennifer once crashed a LiveWire party bus situation, and that was a fun hang. Linda Critchfield of Lancaster, California. Emily and Clark Griffith of Estes Park, Colorado.
Great names, by the way. These are all great names, but I especially like the name Clark. I don't know many Clarks, and I think Emily's a really good name, too.
Emily and Clark Griffith. Thank you both. Estes Park, Colorado, I believe, is kind of it's the gateway to a lot of amazing natural beauty. I think a lot of like people who are almost professional outdoors people, rock climbers and hikers and folks that are very, very, very involved in the outdoor world, a lot of them, I think, have Estes Park, Colorado as their kind of, it's where their P.O. box is, because it's the jump off to a lot of amazing natural beauty. Oh my goodness, look at these two. OG TBTL supporters and family, Lauren and Zach Yost. Lauren and Zach have been supporting the show and interacting with the show since the earliest days of the program. And all these, they're in Brooklyn, New York, by the way. And all these years later, I remain slightly in the dark on how I say their last name properly. And I think, I want to say it's been Yost, but the Colin Jost addition to my brain has now got me wondering.
Mm-hmm. Like, we've talked about it so much, we can't even remember where we landed. Yost seems right to me. I feel like every year we get an email from them saying that.
Yes. Okay. So, thank you very much, Lauren and Zach. And appreciate you just being ride or die with this show all these years later. How about Nicole Keith of Albany, New York? Albany, another place that I mispronounced for many years. I wanted to call it Albany. I don't know why.
It's a Utica thing.
But it's Albany. It's a Utica thing. But it is Albany, and it is where Nicole Keith resides and where Nicole Keith supports TBTL from. So thank Nicole, for this amazing.
Nicole.
When are you going to finally thank me?
Nicole.
Thank
is it that
you.
Hard to send a thank you note to Luke? Come on.
I mean, what about Amy Rohrabach of Seattle, Washington? Amy, when's the last time you thanked me?
Yeah.
Who are you thanking?
What if we turn this list into a grievance list? All these people who gave us money so that we can continue to do the show.
Yes.
But we just, every day we get on here and we take six names and we berate them for not sending us a thank you note.
But I will tell you this. If you do send me a thank me, I will then, like Steve Buscemi in Billy Madison, I think it is, or maybe it's Happy Gilmore, one of those movies. I will, like Steve Buscemi in that movie, I will then use lipstick to cross your name off of my list of people I'm going to get even with.
That's right. Do you know that I didn't even know that scene until this show? I think somewhere in the archives of TVTL, there is a moment where I watch that scene for the first time and laugh, I think.
It's pretty good.
It is.
All right. So thank you so much to me.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story today, five parrots have been removed from public view at a British wildlife park after they started swearing at customers. They had been donated to something called the Lincolnshire Wildlife Park. Maybe it's Lincolnshire.
Probably.
Maybe it's Albany. Wildlife Park. It's in eastern England. The chief executive of the park said, it just went ballistic. They were all swearing. We were a little concerned about the children. I get called a fat. It's funnier if I say what I think he said, but that's probably inappropriate for this show, right, Andrew?
Okay, yeah. But give us a taste.
How about this? Well, it feels like a very British, like these birds swear in British isms.
Okay.
The guy who directs this thing said every time he walked by the birds, they would call him a fat T asterisk 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 T. So
I love that I don't know what that is, but don't try to tell me more.
Can I spell the first two letters?
No, don't. We can all figure it out on our own if we want to.
TW.
Okay, we don't say that, yeah.
I get called a fat TW every time I walk past them, Nichols complained.
Okay.
They are African gray parrots. They're named Eric, Jade, Elsie, Tyson, and Billy. I don't know why those names are, like, funny to me. They were given to the park from five different owners within the same week. Also, it's interesting to me that these sound like these could be children in the same family. Like, you would drive up behind a parrot family in their minivan, and they would have those little stick figures.
Right.
And they would be like, Eric, Jade, Elsie, Tyson, and Billy.
Uh-huh.
These were five different parrot owners who named their parrots very kind of human names and mm-hmm. then decided they didn't want their African gray parrots anymore. And so they gave them to the park. Staff immediately noticed. Oh, I should mention, this is an article from CNN. Rob Paquetta writing in CNN. The staff immediately noticed the birds shared a propensity to fly off the handle. They literally, within a very short period of time, started swearing at each other, said Nichols. F off is the most common one, he explained. Mm-hmm. It's a very easy one for them to learn. But he said the birds will utter anything you can think of. Like, this feels to me almost like this is like the A-Team origin story of a band of rogue birds. Like, five birds come together from different households, different backgrounds. But when they get together, they realize, or like it's the Voltron of dirty birds. Like, here they are now together at this park, swearing it up, talking to each other. They just seemed like they immediately fell into a bit of a click here. Many customers enjoyed the talent that the parrots displayed.
Who wouldn't?
Quote, the visitors were giving them as much back as they were giving to them.
Yeah, see, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, right? Not prophecy, but it becomes almost like an engine of dirty bird creation, because the birds start imitating each other, and then the people hear it, and then the people are amused, so they start swearing at the birds, so the birds are exposed to more swearing. Like, it'll never end. Pardon me, I'm getting upset, but by the end of this, I think all of our birds will be swearing at us.
I'll be totally honest. If I went to this bird park or this wildlife park, and there were some African gray parrots, and they were calling the guy in charge of the park a fat TW, I would laugh my ass off. And then if the birds were swearing at me, I would probably be inclined to swear back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually, I wouldn't. I would just laugh. If a bird swore at me, my reaction would be to die of laughter. It would actually not be to swear back at the bird, for whatever that's worth.
If nobody was around, would you swear back at the bird?
No, because I wouldn't be. To me, swearing back at the bird is like, that's me trying to get even with the bird. That's me trying to meet the – like, that's me treating the bird as an equal. Like, if a bird calls me a fat TW, it's just repeating something it learned. It's not actually making a statement about my look or my way of being in the world. And so it would – like, to me, swearing back would be like, if a person swore at me, I might swear back at them. But a bird swearing at me, I would just laugh. I would think it was so funny.
Don't you think that somewhere in the back of like an like a messy IT department somewhere, maybe even in American Public Media, there is like a big roll of fat TW cable? Like fat TW cable sounds so much like something that you need for internet infrastructure.
Not anymore, but they still have it. Like, and they moved on to a new system.
Right, exactly. It was in vogue for just like a little bit,
and they bought like hundreds of miles of it, and now it's actually not the industry standard, but they've still got it on a big, giant, you know, one of those like sort of spindles that you can use for a picnic table.
Hey, Cha, get over here, man. Look at this. He's got a machine that's still running on fat TW.
Oh, man. And back in the rack room? Sure. So this is kind of interesting. I guess there's been a surge of parrot donations during the pandemic because owners are spending more time with their birds.
Yeah.
And the way that the CNN article says, they decide to give them to parks that can provide them with a larger living space. But I think what happens is if you have to live in, you know, we've got listeners who have birds and love them and peace and love to that relationship. But I got the feeling that a few people living with their swearing African gray birds that are calling them fat TWs, you're home for the pandemic. And at some point, you're basically like, I'm sorry, Eric and Jade. You gots to go.
I thought I was a bird lover, and then I spent more time with my bird.
Yeah. A lot of relationships are actually, you know, being a sort of – a lot of people are having to deal with the reality of their relationships now that they're stuck mm-hmm. with the people and the animals in their lives more of the time. And it would appear that a lot of people who had these birds decided they didn't want to continue – they didn't want to move forward in life with these birds. The other thing that I thought was kind of funny is this guy who runs this park – says, we would normally take in one or two parrots in a fortnight. How long is a fortnight? I should know.
Don't ask me that. Is it 8 weeks? No.
This has come up before on the show.
I'm going to say 8 weeks, but I'm wrong about that. This has a real summer games vibe to me. Are you looking it up or am I?
Yeah. How long is a fortnight?
14 days. Oh, I couldn't have been more wrong.
Why not say 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks is easy. It's as easy as Fortnite.
And that doesn't get converted. I mean, I'm not saying this guy in the UK needs to change everything for my little eyes, but I'm saying mm-hmm. 14 days, 2 weeks means 2 weeks in the UK, and it means 2 weeks over here.
Can Fortnite. Can we try to remember this?
Are you defending the castle? Simmer down, Stu.
The name does make sense, though. Here's how we can remember it in the future, and we won't. I
14
won't.
Nights.
But yeah, Fort. 14. Fort. I should be able to remember that. Not eight. It's not.
But it could also be 40 days. See, I just did that, that's so it'll true. Mess with your brain next
great.
Time.
Fantastic. Good. Well, it's good thing my brain is Jost. So sharp. So yeah.
But he said that they basically every 2 weeks, they usually get two or three parrots every 2 weeks. Today alone, we took in eight.
Oh my God.
And I guess this. I guess according to this article. This is a fairly regular issue that they get parrots that people don't want anymore, and the parrots' main way of communicating is through swear words.
Really?
Yeah.
The swearing, I mean, I thought this was just like I said before, like kind of an engine where you got a swearing bird that's influencing another swearing bird, and you're putting them all together, and you get a whole gang of swearing birds. But like, this is a big thing throughout time, people getting rid of their birds because they swear too much? Why do birds, why are they attracted to swearing?
Well, what this guy who runs this park is saying that it's fairly common for them to get parrots, and it's fairly common for those parrots to know swear words.
Oh, I see. Okay,
but they've just been getting so many of them, and they got this particularly rebellious crew that are now kind of winding each other up, and it got so dirty and cacophonous that they had to basically move this family of birds. Out of the sort of public's sight and hearing, but it would appear that it's not uncommon for people to dump their birds on these places and for those birds to mostly know swear words. And again,
that
I think it just
sense.
Speaks like, yeah. What about Oops, the dirty monster, the bird that you yeah. grew up with? Did that bird know any swears?
We weren't allowed to say fart in our house, as I discussed recently. So like, no, that bird wasn't swearing.
What about
and
fart
also,
night? I've been waiting all day for farty night.
You know that there's like tons of 11-year-olds who call Fortnite fart night. No, that bird didn't really, it wasn't really good at talking. I think it could maybe say oops. But anyway, putting that
you
aside.
You guys would say, weren't you, wasn't the deal that you're supposed to say oops when it crapped on things to teach it that was a mistake and then the bird's name became Oops, or what was the story?
Yeah, I guess my mom just never named it. My mom sent me another pack of photos, by the way. I think I mentioned on the show that she moved recently, and she just keeps sending me tons and tons of photos. I haven't gone through all of these yet, although I did find one of me on my little motorcycle. I had no photos of the motorcycle I had growing up. I'm very excited about that. But I wonder if there's any Oops pictures. I haven't seen a picture of Oops in far more than a fortnight, more like a fort month or a year, a fort decade. Going back to the original statement you made about people giving up their birds are in line with the birds that swear, that makes sense. The sentence I said didn't make sense. I could have constructed that better. But point is,
what a
the
fat
people
W.
The people who get birds and are super serious about it and will have a lifetime companion with a bird probably isn't as likely to be the person who's like, let's get a parrot and teach it how to swear, right? Like you get a kind of a Beavis and Butthead contingent who are like, let's go to the pet store. Why do you want to get a parrot? Well, it'd be funny to teach him bad words. That's probably the person who isn't in it for the long haul.
I see. So the God-fearing families and people who take their bird ownership seriously, they'll teach the bird, you know, probably want a cracker and things like that. But it's the same people that basically got the bird to just teach it to say bad words are the same people that will also probably abandon ownership of the bird when it becomes a hassle.
That's what I think. Doesn't,
I
mean,
see
you
that.
Can see you can see like a Venn diagram or a connection there.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. The other thing is birds live for a long time,
yes,
depending, you know.
Yep.
Like the bigger ones, I think, you know, some of those huge, like, you know, tropical birds will live how long? I mean, like, they'll outlive their owners and stuff, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And also, like, it really, I mean, this is just kind of obvious, but, like, no joke, that bird Oops that we had as a, and you're right about the story of Oops and how it got its name. My mom was trying to train it. She'd say Oops when it pooped outside the cage, but then never really gave the bird a name, so we just started calling it Oops. It still confuses me. But unless she was lying to me, which would be a weird lie, when my mom ended up moving across the country, probably, you know, sometime in the 1990s, she still had the bird, but apparently gave it to somebody who was like a real hardcore indoor bird person. So there was like a large room where the birds could just fly around and, you know, have a certain amount of freedom. Now it's starting
kind
to sound like
aviary.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Also, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking like, is this something that you just tell a kid? But I wasn't that young.
Is this
I wasn't
the bird
that young. That's the thing. And I didn't give a shit about the bird. So that's why it doesn't seem like she would be lying to me about that.
It's like the bird equivalent of your dog went to live on a farm upstate.
Right. As I was saying it, I'm like, no, Luke, you don't understand. Oops is living a great life somewhere where it can fly free and has a loving family.
I'm trying to find what are the longest living birds? Cookie, a Major Mitchell's cockatoo who has resided at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo since 1993, has been recognized. And as of 2010, Cookie the cockatoo was 77 years old.
Whoa, but that was 10 years ago. I don't think Cookie's with us anymore, probably, right?
I don't know. That's a good question. Now I'm on some website, 10 of the world's longest lived animals. Let's see.
Can I give you some news here? Cookie passed away in August of 2016, actually the day before my dad's birthday, for whatever that's worth.
Oh, man.
I don't blame my dad. I just wanted to say that.
Well, we can't rule him out as a suspect.
No, we cannot.
Rest in power, Cookie. Now I'm on this website of like longest living animals. Let's see, the oldest rabbit lived 18 plus years. Mm-hmm. It was in Tasmania, I guess. The rabbit was named Flopsy and lived almost 19 years. The oldest spider, 28 years, they think.
What kind? There are spiders. Sort of big that, one.
Oh, man, dude, it is spider season. I don't know if you've noticed around your house.
Yes, we had
spider, like, and I want to say, you know, we try to keep things pretty tidy around here. We had two or three massive spider webs inside the living room, like running from like the ceiling down to the couch. And I just caught it because the sunlight coming in the window, like basically I would have walked through it, but the light hit it just right.
They move fast. I mean, that's the thing. You get one spider in there, you go to bed, you wake up the next day, you could have a really big web in there. I have them down in my garbage area. Every day I go to take out the garbage, I got to knock down another huge web with a spider usually in it looking at me.
Yeah, there are three elaborate and robust webs outside the window here of the broadcast center that I'm looking at, which I mean, live and let live. I'm not actually particularly afraid of spiders either, so I'm letting them do their thing. But, man, they are everywhere right now. The oldest dog, this website says, was an Australian cattle dog who lived to the age of 29 years old.
Wow.
Think about that. I know that we've talked about this on the show. They're rethinking the 7-year kind of rate. You know, the 7 years for a dog is like a year for a human. Mm-hmm. But even so, like, 29 years, that's a long time. A cat lived to 38 years.
Oh my god. I'm starting to think Theo's gonna live to be 38. Cats, he's like 19 now. He's losing a lot of weight, but he's otherwise seems pretty healthy. He's loud, he's a pain in the ass.
His lung capacity is still good.
Oh my god, I what I wouldn't give for his lung capacity. So yeah, but he's 19 and I mean potentially going on 20. We're a little bit hazy on exactly how old he is, but yeah, he might make it to 38.
How long do you think the oldest goldfish lived?
Wow, now goldfish, darling. I don't know if you know, but I played a character who was married to a goldfish for a while.
What did you learn about goldfish from playing that role? I assume you kind of went deep. You went, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis style on it. You lived as a goldfish for a couple of years.
I built my own
fish
bowl.
I
built my own fishbowl.
Uh-huh.
A good Daniel Day-Lewis joke because he built a house, I believe, to get into a role. But that's okay. Other people will get it. I did. I lived as a goldfish. I wrote a book called My Year as a Goldfish. I would ask you to look it up and maybe even
My Goldfish Teacher. It's a documentary. It's the follow-up to My Octopus Teacher.
Right. Hey, by the way, can I say that? Like, I don't want to slag on something that you like, but I don't like the name of that documentary.
I don't either.
It's a weird construction, and you can go back, rewind the tape to 15 minutes ago. I constructed a sentence that was absolutely terrible, so who am I to say? But like, that's a weird construction for a movie title.
I agree, and I don't like that title for the movie, and I feel like that's why I have to constantly promote it and try to like help it succeed in spite of that questionable name. Because it sounds like My Octopus Teacher sounds like you got a pet octopus and you wanted to train it, but it was too difficult, so you hired an octopus teacher.
Yeah, a little
like a
bit.
A guy
to
come over and train your octopus.
Yeah.
Like,
I like to think that my octopus saved me. Or no, rescued. I messed up the joke. Isn't that what people say about their rescue dogs?
Sure,
I like to think that my octopus rescued me.
But I will tell you that despite the name that I don't love, the actual film is pretty incredible. And even if you don't get into the like woo-woo animal side of it like I do, just the cinematography is just incredible. It's like a fine TBTL sponsor, the Calm app. It's just like watching this kelp forest kind of undulate underwater. It is a very calming effect.
I believe that.
So even if you're just watching it for that, I would recommend it. By the way, oldest goldfish, 43 years.
No way. I was going to say 4 weeks. Because I thought those things hardly live. But that's, I guess in the wild, they get really big. Is there a difference between... Damn, I wish I hadn't started this sentence, but I will finish it. But why in my head do I think there's not that big of a line between goldfish and carp? For some reason, I think I grew up thinking that if a goldfish is let out into the wild and can just like eat garbage for long enough, it becomes, generally speaking, a carp, which I don't think that's how science works. I think the jury's still out on science.
Well, think about it. Like a goldfish, a larger version of a goldfish, or at least what looks like it to us, would be a koi. And a koi just looks like a more beautiful carp.
Okay, here, goldfish are part of the carp family.
Ooh.
So there you go. Okay, I'm not that much of an idiot. There was a reason why I was connecting them in my head a little bit.
This is what this website says. Reports of goldfish living into their 40s are surprisingly commonplace, with many of them spending their whole lives with the same family whose child won them at a fair or festival. Mm-hmm. Owners who would like to prolong the lives of their goldfish as long as possible would do well to provide them with a larger aquarium than the stereotypical goldfish bowl and feed them a variety of foods, not those smelly fish flakes. So if you were to get a goldfish and you were to like really idealize the conditions, put it in a large tank, give it a variety of foods, make sure that you don't put like a betta fish in there with it or whatever, you could get a long life out of that fish. Interestingly enough, the oldest polar bear is 42.
Wow, so was it friends with the goldfish?
There's a goldfish that outlived a polar bear.
Wow, I wonder if they knew each other. Probably not, but I like to think that they did.
They ended up at the same retirement home like the Irishman. And I honestly did not buy the prosthetics. You know, they were trying to – actually, that's not true. I messed that joke up. I didn't buy the younger version of the goldfish and the polar bear when they were just getting started in organized crime.
And De Niro did play the goldfish, right?
I saw these hilarious – I guess you would call them stills from the set of The Irishman. It would never occur to me that I guess Robert De Niro is maybe not that tall, or they wanted Robert De Niro's character – to be much taller than he is naturally. Wait, is it? Am I thinking of De Niro or Pacino? I think it's De Niro. I think it was from The Irishman. If you Google this, there are these pictures. I think it's like De Niro. He's walking with Pesci. Again, Pesci is no tall drink of water himself. But De Niro is fully done up in his, you know, 1950s sort of Irishman regalia. And he is standing on these lifts that are basically extension of the soles of his shoes that have to be a foot each. And it's almost like I'm impressed that he could do the scene while walking on what are basically stilts.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second. I just looked up Robert De Niro height.
Are you seeing
height.
What I'm referring to?
I'm not seeing that specific thing, but I just wanted to look up his height. Robert De Niro is 5'10", according to Google.
Right,
but
which is tall by Hollywood standards.
The interesting thing here is it says people also search for, which is, this is interesting, Al Pacino is 5'7", Joe Pesci is 5'4", and for some reason we now know that Joaquin Phoenix is 5'8".
I think Googling how tall Hollywood stars are, particularly, you know, male Hollywood stars, is quite a pastime. If you just type in how tall into Google, it'll immediately go to a bunch of, okay, so here I found the picture. Oh, my God. This is hilarious. I don't think we have the rights to make this the show pick, but if you just Google, Andrew, if you Google De Niro, what I Googled was De Niro lifts the Irishman. There's a People magazine article. Robert De Niro wears platform shoes to tower over Al Pacino. So clearly what happened they thought that the character – it's not that Robert De Niro is particularly short. It's that they wanted his character to be very tall, like look like they're 6'4". But like – I mean it's an impressive thing that De Niro could do the scene while walking on those lifts because they're – I mean he looks like he's Lady Miss Keir from the – 90s rave group Delight.
Yes, they
you're welcome everyone for that deep pull.
I've been seeing these kind of coming back. Like I feel like the kind of 90s goth boot has been coming back into fashion a little bit. Maybe you see it on TikTok. I'm not sure where I see this stuff. I don't know where I see young people these days, but probably TikTok. And I feel like, yeah, if these were, instead of being shoes, if these were like Doc Martin style combat boots, that would be very in right now.
Yeah. Can we go out with the Delight song, Groove is in the Heart?
We can. I want to say I did have Love Take Me Down to the Streets dialed up since before the show began, but I mean, we could maybe go out with Groove is in the Heart.
But that's not a real song.
It is. You didn't know that they did turn into a real song, and I think it might even be It might be in the credits of Role Models, but I could play that.
Well, then
here.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Okay. Did they get Paul McCartney to do it?
I don't know. They did not. It's I don't know who these people are. Joey Caratolo and Amy Miles. But anyway, we'll go with that. But I like Luke Grooves in the Heart, so maybe we can save that for tomorrow.
Yeah. That was one of those CDs that I got. That Delight CD that has Groove is in the Heart on it. It was one of my Columbia House 12 CDs that I got. And I don't even know if it's a good album or good CD. Like, I don't know if that music really holds up. But if you played any song off of that album, I would immediately recognize it. Because that was just playing constantly on my Discman that was running through my hi-fi receiver in my room for like half of my high school years.
Well, let's face it, Luke. This is a pro-choice CD. Didn't it say that on there somewhere? Because I remember I went to a Catholic school. I could be totally wrong. I just have this weird memory of this CD that pops into my head every time the idea of this CD comes up, which is I did not have the CD. I know the song Groove is in the Heart. I like the song Groove is in the Heart. It's one of the best songs with a slide whistle in it that I can think of off the top of my head.
The album was World Click.
And I remember, who said it, my friend Dave Kovalik, who also went to St. Ignatius with me, and like, he was not some conservative person. I don't know what his feelings were. We were just growing up in a conservative place and going to a conservative school that was a Catholic school that taught you that abortion was bad. I think at this point, he and I would guess would have rejected that notion, but maybe not, because all I remember is him not being a fan of them and him being riled up for some reason, because apparently the CD said on it somewhere, let's face it, this is a pro-choice CD.
It must have been on the back, because I'm looking at the cover of a Delight World Click, and it's just got the members of the band and then the words Delight World Click, and they're kind of in a galaxy somewhere. And by the way, Lady Miss Keir is wearing shoes that are not terribly dissimilar than the one De Niro is wearing. Maybe on the back of the album, or the back of the CD somewhere.
This is a totally false memory, which would somehow be even more interesting to me. Like, because if I totally made this thing up, like, what the hell was the seed of this false memory of mine? Because it's a very specific, weird thing, right?
I like the idea that you've been walking around a little suspicious of Delight.
Yeah, right.
Years over this.
But the thing is, I am also pro-choice, or maybe I shouldn't say also. I don't know. Like, did I just make this up? I don't know.
Interestingly enough, Lady Miss Keir is Trump's backup for Amy Barrett Cohen if she's somehow not confirmed for the Supreme Court. So, you know, just something to kind of consider. Much to consider from this edition of TBTL.
Good to know.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right, you ran out of time on the fake honey story, but I am excited to tell you about it tomorrow. Because it's a weird thing. There was the U.S. government launched something called Operation Honeygate and charged two of the largest honey importers in the U.S. with counterfeit honey, Andrew. Mm. So we'll talk about that tomorrow.
I have a Honeygate list. what term do you hate more, man cave or honeydew list?
Oh, boy. God, that's such a good question. I guess man cave?
Yeah.
But it's just neck. It's a photo finish.
What about grocery getter to describe a car?
That's a distant third. It's a little bit less gendered. Yeah. It's just, you know, I mean, the honey-do list is, I mean, it's the implication, right? As they say on It's Always Sunny. It's like the implication of the honey-do list is it's just that it's like, the way that that just describes so much about a view of relationships in just a couple of words there, that you've got to do these things so that, like, you know, your battle axe of a wife will leave you alone. I got to get through this honey-do list.
Yeah.
But the implication of the man cave is like, this is where we men hang out, which is also just not really how I like to vibe.
Well, you've always been a she shed.
I'm a she shed guy, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Big time. I've been stalling here. I don't know if you can tell because I don't have any brand new emails, but and I have been keeping up on these things too. Well, let me play a little bit of voicemail roulette. I've been also trying to stay on top of voicemails better. Although one did.
Can I share an email with you that I think is interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
From listener Annie, Anne, I should say, listener Anne. Who's I'm not exactly sure where Anne is checking in
New
from.
New Hampshire. It's Anne from New Hampshire.
Because she's she knows who. Remember yesterday I was talking about the Congressional Candy Caucus?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a congressperson from, I guess, New Hampshire, Annie. I'm going to go with Kuster.
Mm-hmm.
And listener Anne says that Annie Kuster is fantastic. It does much more than push candy. But Anne pointed out, her husband loves seeing the little ones show up all dressed and hopped up on sugar for trick-or-treating. Of course, yesterday we were talking about how the candy lobby is trying very hard to make sure that we all know that Halloween is still very much a thing so that we will buy their candy. And it looks like Anne's husband is going to build this chute, like a long tube, and they're laid out in the Washington Post. As a thing that, I don't know how many people are doing this, but a guy in Cincinnati came up with this idea. You take this long, actually, maybe it's a cardboard tube, one of those very rigid cardboard tubes, and you attach it to your handrail on your house, and then what you can do is put the candy in the your end of the chute, and it'll drop down to the kids who are trick-or-treating, and I have to say, it's quite charming.
Yes, if the handrail is attached to stairs, of course, so you got that downward motion there. Yeah, I thought that was cute.
But, I think this is – I actually think it's kind of a fun thing. And were I a kid out trick-or-treating, I saw somebody else built a little zip line. This is kind of – again, I don't think it's sweeping the nation, but this is something that I have seen other people doing online of coming up with creative ways to get the candy from their house to the little ghouls and goblins. And I do think that's actually pretty cute. So I guess I would join the Candy Association by saying, hashtag Halloween is happening.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that because, like, the idea of trick or treating seems not right to me. I understand. Like, listen, I mean, this has been, I can't even imagine what it's like to be a kid through all this. I can't believe how long this has gone on, and my heart legit goes out to them. But my brain also says, yeah, we're gonna have to skip Halloween this year, and trick or treating shouldn't be like at the top of the list of things that we need to preserve during a pandemic. Yet, I'll be honest, I don't know, like. For some reason, this tube doesn't really seem it doesn't seem to solve it. I guess it solves the problem of the trick-or-treaters being close to the person at the door, but I just think there's so much more going on that if you're trick-or-treating, you're probably also seeing big crews of kids together because often, like in a city, don't they gather together for safety and go on these expeditions?
I guess. I mean, I am no epidemiologist, but it feels to me like there's a way to do it safely outside. I think, to me, what the bigger danger is drunk adults having Halloween parties where 100 people are drunk and dressed up and not wearing a mask because it will ruin their costume, drinking out of the same punch bowl and doing whatever adults do at parties. That strikes me as a bigger danger. But again, I don't say that from any scientific perspective. That's just my gut.
No, that definitely sounds terrible. I'm a sexy vaccine.
God, why did I laugh over that? Can I throw? I know you're trying to play some voicemails. Really wish I would have left that in the clear. Can I just mention very quickly on the subject of, I guess, Halloween? Listener Mark checked in and said, "Hey, Luke, I think we ordered the same Halloween mask. I saw it on Instagram, and then I looked for it on Amazon. Now, I do you see that picture I sent you and our other sports enthusiast friends, Andrew?"
No. Oh, yes. See, I didn't know what this Halloween mask thing was referring to, but yeah, you did post a photo on our private text chain of you wearing an old man mask or something.
I must have mentioned this on the show because listener Mark knew about it. Yeah. I saw it on TikTok, of course, this ad for a hyper-realistic old man mask. Or maybe I just tweeted it out and that's where Mark saw it. But it looked... I sort of knew it was going to be BS, but this, you know, it's a very compelling video of somebody pulling on this latex mask that's very tight fitting to their face, and it has a movable mouth, and like, you know, your lips kind of fit inside the mask so that you can move them almost like you're talking, and they shoot this so that it looks incredible. It's almost like a Hollywood level mask, And I don't know why I was in a weird mood. I just thought it was funny, and it was like $20, so I ordered it. And I got the mask, and it's... Mark, I'm here to tell you, manage your expectations, brother. Mark is very excited to get the mask, and I'm hoping I'm going to get it before Halloween. But the tracking number they gave me has it in an airport in Xiamen City, China, for a week. It seems strange, but I was wondering if you were experiencing the same thing. I'm a fan of the show, and thank you for keeping me sane. It seems people here in Michigan are losing their minds sometimes. Signed, Mark. Mark, I did get the mask again. Unfortunately, it's not nearly as cool as it looks in the ad. But it is good for taking a picture of, and also for kind of wigging out your dog, which is what I did. I put it on, and then I wanted to see if Rudy would still recognize me. She didn't. I was thinking maybe she would attack me. She would think there was an intruder in the house. She just looked at me quizzically.
You know, while we're talking, this is something that came in that I didn't play on the show because it's very long and there's other reasons I didn't. But remind me who Gary Goldman is. I know we've talked about him on the show before. I know he's a stand-up comedian. But
yeah.
What's his background? He was on one of those stand-up reality show contests, right?
Yeah, he was on I think it was called, I forget the name of it, but he was on one of those reality shows. But he was a working and beloved comic before that. I think what happened for a lot of those comics was, you know, it was an NBC network show. And so a lot of very accomplished touring professional comics also, you know, tried out for that show because it was just a chance to get a lot of airtime on national TV. Gary Goldman suffered from depression and put out a special called The Great Depresh. Recently, well, not that recently now, a couple years ago, where he talks a lot about his depression, which was quite profound. The reason he is legendary on our show is because he's the guy that does that bit about how the state abbreviations got decided that we played replayed, forgetting I had played it once already. That is Gary Goldman.
Okay, gotcha. So generally speaking, we like him. So somebody sent me in, and I'll actually tell you who this was. The listener Park sent this in. I told you my grocery store dilemma. I don't even know if it was a dilemma, but situation the other day where somebody left their grocery cart in line in front of me and then went off to do some more shopping. The line continued to move, so I moved around the abandoned shopping cart. The person came back and did not like the fact that I cut around them, so just jammed between me, just cut back in front of me and did not worry about social distancing and reclaimed his spot in line. I was pretty angry about that. Well, apparently Goldman has an entire bit about it. Not apparently.
Yes.
He sent it in to me. It was 7 minutes long, which is why I didn't play it on the show. There's also a part in this where he has basically the same exact experience in this bit where he's in a grocery store, only it's a woman who leaves her cart there and then tries to cut again. And there's a part in there where he's describing what the woman looks like, which is pretty unkind and like dips into some sexism. But let me see if I can get past that and just play a little bit more of this. You now know the setup because there were some funny
parts. Yeah, I know
parts.
This bit. This is, to be honest with you, and peace and love to the listener who sent it in. It's very germane to the conversation that we were having yesterday. If you do not know Gary Goldman's material, I would not put this at the top of his bits for me. I remember seeing this in a special and being kind of like, sort of low-hanging fruit, the way he's describing the events. But that being said, why not?
Well, then what must you have thought of my story the other day?
That didn't sound like anything to me.
She says, I was ahead of you. I said, yes, you were ahead of me. Until you went shopping. And she says no. And she pushes me in the basket. She pushes me out of the way, goes ahead. And I'm horrified. I wasn't expecting this to turn violent. And I'm looking around for somebody in the grocery store to come to my aid. And then I realize, oh yeah, I'm an adult. I can come to my own aid. I can take a stand, which is something I don't normally do because I'm a spineless... But
well, there's a word we don't use on this show.
I've seen stands taken, and basically you need a gesture and a slogan. So I went with, this isn't fair! I used the Black Power symbol from the 1968 Olympics, which I thought was really appropriate. I said, this isn't fair, thinking it would start a groundswell of support. There was silence, except for a man behind me who said, up, here we go.
Then I think he goes on to describe the glow. That was one detail in this I kind of liked. Nobody actually steps in to help as he wants to confront this line cutter, but everybody whips out their phones, and there's a soft glow as everybody is filming him with their phones, which is exactly, he does capture the helplessness that I felt in the moment.
I keep saying this over and over about TikTok, but it has really become just personal grievance and then people filming confrontations. Although they have a rule, you're not allowed to show actual physical violence between people. So it's unlike World Star, it's like no one's ever actually getting, punched or pushing each other. It's always the aftermath of it or the lead up to it. And I always wonder about that impulse to not so much intervene in a situation, but film it. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just what we do. I mean, again, a version of that seemed to happen to me the other day when somebody was mad at me about Rudy being an annoying dog, admittedly. I guess that, and you said maybe it has to do with the feeling of powerlessness, but mm-hmm. it's like we're all just now at this point, most of us anyway, are just filming anytime an interaction starts to get to, let's say 10 is physical conflict. As soon as it gets to 6, most of us have our phone out and we're now documenting it.
Well, there's
two different wearing body cams.
Yeah, there's two different parts of that though, right? So the example that I gave when I was in line and I felt very, very, I guess put upon this line cutter made me so angry that I was going to pretend to take his photo, just hoping it was the most passive aggressive move. I wanted him to have the feeling of, well, this person, I made this person so mad that he's documented who I am, and maybe that could go up online. I was doing that out of this, again, just impotent rage and passive aggressiveness. But then I think I'm the person who feels the rage and is in the heart of the situation. But then what Goldman is describing here is the bystanders with their mm-hmm. phone, right? And I don't think I've ever been I have to capture this. I've been tempted if I see a whole bunch of cops around one person of color or something along the lines of that. If I'm I saw that scene the other day when I was driving somewhere, so I couldn't pull out my phone. But then I'm kind of maybe there's a responsibility here because mm-hmm. somebody's sure. got to hold these people accountable. But I can't think of a time I've ever been a bystander who's oh, here we go. Have you ever done that? Because sometimes it might be the responsible thing to do depending on what's going on.
I
can't see.
I have
you
to
doing
say
it.
Well, no, the problem is, again, started the show by saying this, and maybe we'll end the show by saying this. I guess I don't know if this is a fear reaction that turns into anger or if I just have a lot of simmering rage. But when I watch these TikTok videos where somebody is – one of them was in a – a Target. And there was a guy who was mad that they were not going to accept his return. And he's just screaming at the poor Target employee. It might have been Walmart anyway, one of those kinds of stores.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And then the other Walmart employees are coming over. And the sad part is they're sadly used to these freakouts, whether it's mm-hmm. I'm not going to wear a mask in your store or you fat TW, how dare you not accept my return, which I'm sure was probably, the item was probably stolen or in bad condition. I'm sure the person at the store had every right to not accept the return. The employees come and then they just sort of de-escalate or they stand there and then someone's videotaping a non-employee. And when I watched – there was one where a guy wouldn't wear a mask in a Subway sandwich shop. And he's at the – there's a long line. It's obviously a lunch rush. There's an S-shaped line and he's up at the glass and he's screaming at the employees. And the employee is saying, sir, I can't serve you a sandwich unless you wear a mask. And he's screaming at her. And what goes through my mind when I see that is if I was in that room, I would beat the shit out of that person or the guy yelling at the Target or Walmart employee. I don't know if I would, but there's about an 80% chance I would tackle them. And again, I'm not saying that's not me saying I'm manly or that's the right approach. It's probably the wrong approach because what these employees wisely understand is people like that are irate, they're unhinged, but they usually just scream a bunch and then leave. And that is a better outcome than a physical confrontation. But there's something about that kind of energy in a situation. If I'm there, I just kind of know I would tackle those dudes. Again, not that that's the right call, but I just think that's what my reaction would be. It would definitely not be to videotape it, stand there videotaping it.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I don't know how this question wasn't raised on Monday's show, not what is your fantasy or what would you want to do, but literally speaking, knowing everything you know about the situation I was in on Monday, would you have, what would you have done? Would you have just done what I did, which was mostly just say nothing and stand there? Again, maybe I passive aggressively kind of took a photo of this guy's kind of back of his head. But aside from that, I did nothing. Would you have done anything? Would you have
said
something?
It would totally depend on my mood. So if I were in a, if I were in a generous mood or a non – if I wasn't triggered for whatever reason, this is what's so complicated, Andrew, about my constantly changing emotional state. I could see a world where I would just kind of think to myself, well, that was rude, but whatever. I'm not in any rush. You know, I could see being completely unfazed by it. And I could also see if I was in a different mood saying, what the fuck? And then, like, just dealing with, and then if the guy turned around and he wanted to scrap, I mean, I will tell you that there is a point, and again, this sounds like I'm saying this with some amount of pride, and I really am not. Like, one of the great regrets of my life is how often I have resorted to physically trying to solve things when it just wasn't necessary and was dangerous and a bad idea and traumatic to the people around me. Like, I really, that's really my belief. But there's also a point where, if I say what the F to this guy, I am now in my mind mentally preparing for where this ends, which is if he steps to me, I'm definitely stepping to him. And then I guess I'm just a 44-year-old public radio host fighting a guy in a Safeway.
Right, know? Exactly.
I well, agree let me it's a question. Bad outcome, but I'm just saying if I was in a mood where somebody crossed me in that way, I would call them out. And in calling them out, part of my brain would be preparing for – like, what wouldn't happen is me saying, what the F, him turning around and saying, what are you going to do about it? And me saying, nothing. Like, it's just, it's going to go to some place that it probably shouldn't and doesn't need to go.
Well, we've talked before, and you haven't had, we haven't talked in a while about it, so I assume you haven't had any encounters like this
in a long
time.
I mean, the pandemic is really... Has really slowed down my. Although the funny part is, I do go through stores. Before the statewide mask mandate, I did go through every grocery store in my mind wanting to just yell at so many people. So ironically, the possibility of me getting in a fight kind of went up, but no fights. I'm happy to report.
But have you ever gotten into a fight that wasn't alcohol related, like that you weren't at bar or at a bar? Like, you've been in physical fights that have happened just in the middle of the day, like at a grocery store situation or something? Although I'm assuming
maybe
not
in the middle of the
store.
Day, but not alcohol fueled.
Really?
I mean, I've been in things that got very, very close, like driving around L.A. with Addie and my ex. We were looking at we had a star map. We were driving around looking at Brad Pitt's house and stuff. And I got some guy was honking at me and I stopped and kind of put my hands up. And then he stopped his car and got out. And it was just like it was just basically two people, me and him, who are very terrible at working through their emotions colliding. Because usually what happens is you get one person who is spoiling for a fight and one person who's willing to de-escalate. That's how most – and then every once in a while, just the random, the random ping pong balls in the bingo tumbler bang into each other and there are two people that are willing to fight. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad scene. But no, I've had some daytime fights, not as many as nighttime fights. It's not – oddly, I'm sure that alcohol is a disinhibitor for me, but it's not about alcohol for me. It's about being triggered in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And what, like, the reason that I get a visceral reaction to watching those, and I don't seek those videos out of people berating workers at places. In fact, I kind of don't like watching them because it gives me this really angry feeling. But what goes through my mind is this is unfair and it needs to be made right. And where my mind goes with making it right is physically dominating the person who's scaring someone else. Mm-hmm. Like, you're screaming. You're a 6'3 guy. You're screaming at a 5'2 female Target employee. And somebody needs to make you feel the way she's feeling. And I'm going to be that person is probably subconsciously what's running through my brain when I observe that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, do you want to, I have a voicemail here. It looks pretty good, but I can save it for tomorrow. If I'm reading between the lines here, we may have a decent bidet story for tomorrow. I don't know. Google Translate is a tough thing. I don't know if this is bidet related or not, but we can maybe save this for tomorrow.
I'm trying to think, what else could it be? Payday? Maybe they had a payday candy bar. What could Google be mistranslating as bidet?
Well, here's all. I'm not seeing anything that looks like bidet. I'm just seeing, like, I pulled one of the nozzles from the bottom, and
that sounds like a bidet.
It sounds, yeah.
Or it was a really messed up candy bar.
I saw a nozzle, and I thought this is probably bidet related. But before we go out, let me establish a little bit of this song since you're unfamiliar with it. I haven't heard this in years. So this is the Love Take Me Down to the Streets that they made, and I believe they made this for the Role Model soundtrack, and I think it sort of sounds like Wings. Let's let this establish here.
Okay.
And shimmers in the
This is a pretty good Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Love, take me down. Love, take me down.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Nobody try to fight me in the grocery store, okay? That serves as a warning. Actually, this don't berate any employees in any stores where I am, because I can't be responsible for what I might do.
Or any stores. Don't berate people.
Yeah, how about less berating of people? That goes for me, too. I don't want any more berating out of anyone, and that includes me.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, the mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Take me down to the streets. Just when you don't get fed at home, still gotta give the dog his bone. Take that love into the streets. Down. I need you, but you need something special first from me. Love, take me down where I've so often been. Love, take me down to the streets. Come on! Love, take me down to the streets.
Power out.